Aho Manone Con. This is a unique episode because A, this is not an original episode. Me and Sam had recorded one and it all went to heck doo doo. You know, technical difficulties, that kind of thing. Then on top of that, I fell sick for like a week. Nothing bad, just sinuses. I'm still congested, as you can tell my voice. So I'm finally like got energy and feel like talking. And so Sam had a really cool intro. I mean, we had all this stuff done, and it's all lost. But that's what it is. So I was able to go through the archives, and me and Sam actually talk all the time through this app. So I was able to put together this little string. And Sam hardly ever leaves me stuff, but he actually left me some pretty cool things about his sketchy music history, as he likes to call it. And so, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. Sam's sketchy music history. I'm going to tell a story about the battle between Frost and Whirlwind. We're going to talk about the Sync Tuition app. And we're also going to talk about a really cool chief named Chief Hull in the Day. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
So, Josh, as you know, I'm a big sound fan. You know, I really do like the whole science behind sound and the way you can use it to, the way you can use it to relate to other things and explain the processes they go through. I haven't always been that way. And I think it's trite to say, you know, I've always loved music, because that also isn't necessarily true. I don't love every type of music. I'm not really a music hater. I don't hate any of it, but I can turn it out. And just not listen to the radio if I drive somewhere. But long before that, I guess whenever I was in my mid-20s, I was in college. You know, I was a Tommy Boy-like student. And where I went to college, there were a lot of music majors. It was art school, and so anytime you ran into somebody that was a music major, and somehow you had stumbled into the conversation that would lead you to have an opinion on music, you just end up getting insulted and told why you were wrong, and apparently you don't know how to listen to music, and it was kind of insulting. And so I learned real quick to say, anytime somebody asked me, what kind of music do you like, I would just say, nah, it's all good, you know, I'm not really a big music fan, you know, I like it. And of course, that would save you the embarrassment of being told you didn't know anything about music after you tried to share something that you loved, because most people do have a music that they love. And so, like I said, this was whenever I was in college, and I started dating a girl then that she was an international student, and so she liked the music from South America, and so much they have a group down there called Los Jaguares and the Jaguars. They have a guitarist named Vampiro. We went and saw them, and they were good. You know, they reminded me of an 80s rock band, and this was about 2003. And so I also listened to her other CDs, a fellow named Manu Chao, and really just anything. There was a lot of Spanish, but other languages. And at the same time, I was really getting to participate a little bit with the Kiowa people and their cultures, because I had made friends from the Kiowa tribe at the school I was going to. And, of course, they could tell I was interested in Native music. And you couldn't find anything at the Chickasha stores except for flute music. And that wasn't what I was looking for. And, you know, being raised as a, you know, rural white kid pretty much is the way everybody would look at me. You get your music at Walmart. It comes on a cassette or a CD, and the only other way you're going to get some music is to go bootleg it with a tape recorder. And so I asked a fellow there that was my friend if I could come set a recorder up the next time that he and his friends were going to be singing around a drum, and that way I could get some music to listen to. I was so green that I didn't even know that that you weren't supposed to steal other people's songs. And so, anyway, that comes later. And so, whenever I went to, it was at the Wichita, Caddo, and Delaware complex up just north of Anadarko. He and two of his, I believe one was his friend and one was his cousin, but they all had third grade daughters that were down in the Comanche hospital, I believe with pneumonia. There was a lot of pneumonia that hit out in western Oklahoma that year. And so they were having a drum session, and the whole community showed up. The place was packed, but they were singing these songs so that everybody could come together and focus good thoughts to those young girls down there in the hospital. And so it was really, you know, it was a blessing to get to be part of it, to that it, you know, it wasn't just a jam session. But so I go over early, because, you know, I might want to ask some questions, and I was really naive isn't the word, and brave isn't the word either. I just had a genuine interest, and I enjoyed it. And I think eventually, finally, people realized that I wasn't going away, and so I could at least help out or in some way. And so, whenever we got out there, I showed up early, and he showed me some of the things they did to prep the drum before they would go. And whenever we got to, you know, where we set the drum up, I you know, I hadn't touched it or anything. I knew that, you know, that was, you know, I felt I don't want to screw up their drum. So whenever we go in there, my friend tells me to come sit down at the drum circle. This is before anybody else had shown up. And he said, and he said, he handed me a drumstick, and he said, "Have you ever drummed before?" And I was like, "No, man, no." And I looked at the drumstick, and it was, you know, it had more detail to it than I thought it would. And, you know, and I handed it back to him. And he was like, no, go ahead and keep it. He was just real cool about it. I still think he's super cool. And he said, "Sit straight across from me." He was like, "You have to sit like a little offside, but straight across from him so that he could keep an eye on me and prevent me from screwing up in front of all of his friends and the whole community." And so I was nervous, but I stayed for the whole thing, and I got to sit at the drum, and I did feel like an idiot, because I didn't even know how to keep beat, or I was like, am I just supposed to look like I'm singing? Am I supposed to, you know, I didn't know exactly how this went, and all I had wanted to do was set a tape recorder down there. So that's the way that I got broke into the drum. And all these things were going at the same time. I was listening to South American music, and so then I was really interested in, like, powwow songs. I knew there were ceremonial songs, too, but the powwow songs really, you know, I liked them. There was a little more aggression to them. You know, they sound really aggressive, and they usually mean, like, everybody is welcome to come out and dance. They're non-aggressive in what their meaning is, but their delivery is just so, it's, I don't know, passionate. It's great. I like it.
And if you want to, if our listeners want to support the mission, I guess, of Sam and myself, feel free to go to our webpage. It's anchor.fm/MNO-NIKAN. You can find us on Spotify or whatever to help support us. Just go to our webpage, click support, and a couple options will pop up. You know, it's amazing how far 99 cents will go to two guys like us, right? So, hopefully right now we're actually trying to get money to do some traveling, because I really want to go up north and, you know, really get some good stuff going. So, thank you in advance, Miigwech. All right, back to the show.
So, what I was talking about here was how my thoughts on music. So, I was in a community here where, you know, around all these music majors that you couldn't really talk about even modern music, because they would insult you because you didn't know enough about music to have an opinion or know what was good. And I'm sure none of it was. It was early 2000s, and I'm not meaning to insult anybody's band, but I always liked, like, 70s music. I think everybody agrees that the 70s have the best things on film, whether it's music or movies. For some reason, the film that was produced in the 70s just, man, it makes things crisp and good. So I couldn't really talk to the people that had musical opinions that I was used to growing up with, because they'd turned into music snobs. And the girl I was seeing, she liked all this. It was like rap rock that was either in Brazilian or other Spanish South American languages. And so I was just enjoying the music that I didn't understand. I didn't understand the words in most of her music, and I didn't understand the words in these native songs that I was just trying to hear. And so this was like 2003, and I got out of college in 2004. I started dating another girl in 2006, I think it was. And she was the first person that I was around that listened to music in English since I had been in college. And so this had been a few years. And me being a boyfriend, I always made fun of it. And it was things like the plain white tees and the white stripes and Lily Allen. I think those were my three favorite people to make fun of. But, you know, they were all good, too. Another person she really liked was a young Rihanna. And she had that song, Umbrella Ella. And so, you know, she had great musical taste. I just didn't really listen to English-based music anymore. By that time, I was working for the Potawatomis, for the tribe over there, and we were trying to get a drum group there, so I was excited about that. I was learning native songs, still hoping to get to learn some Potawatomi songs at some point. And Justin was in there with us. Like, we really feel as though we were kind of a group of guys that had enough, we were willing to mess up enough and embarrass ourselves to try to learn something. And I've always been proud of him for being able to keep himself there, no matter what group of guys. I think there's been several different groups of guys come and go that have sat with him, but they always, there's some Potawatomi ones in there, and of course tensions flare. Everybody wants to be good and nobody wants to mess up. But that's not the moral of this story. The thing about it was I finally came back after the girl and I split up, I think was around 2009, that I finally turned the radio on. And by this time, Bruno Mars was on the radio. A guy named Pitbull. I'm sure everybody remembers Pitbull because he did great commercials. He had a couple of songs I thought were pretty good. A guy named Bob, B-O-B, he did a couple of songs. I think he had a song called like Magic Man or something. I enjoyed that one. And I guess Katy Perry was new. All these kids I was listening to on the radio now in 2009, I'd never heard of them. I'd never heard any of their music. And I kind of enjoyed it. But, I didn't get too in, I didn't get too into it like I would have whenever I was a kid. And I still agree that the 70s had the best music as far as rock and roll goes. Except for Motown, man. Motown's got some great music. But I never, growing up, I never had aspirations of being able to, or being a musician that played an instrument. I could write pretty well when I was a kid. I could write lyrics and things. I used to try to turn these poems that I wrote whenever I was in high school in for college credit. When I was in college, and I tried to get in a poetry club one year at East Central, and so I took the professor that was in charge of it because I wasn't in any English classes. So he didn't know me, and I took him those as samples, as I knew what poetry was, and he read them, and he kind of got upset with me, and he was like, "These aren't poems; these are songs." He's like, and I was like, "What do you mean?" I said, "They're poems to me. I don't sing them, and I don't play an instrument." And he said, "Well, they have perfect meter, and they all rhyme. That's a song, and we don't do that here." And I was incredibly let down because I'd put a lot of work into them, and some of them I thought were pretty good, and some of them weren't. A lot of teen angst going on there. And so still, I have all these old writings, and I've made some of them into songs now. I just can't sing and don't know how to make music. So, but that satisfied my need for most of them. However, once I got into this information about basically sound therapy and how you can use it on yourself, one of the ways I used to decompress the stress I was feeling from, well, from proving myself wrong. I felt like I should have done that a long time earlier. I would, because I was watching videos on Gaia or YouTube or looking up internet information, maybe crossed with a book, maybe. I looked at a few books. But for a large part, it was YouTube, the kind of stuff people make fun of. And until you've seen Gaia, you really shouldn't lump it together with YouTube. They do a great job of cleaning up the confusion that happens whenever you get woke watching YouTube. Because the thing about YouTube is those stories or those things on YouTube, they have the story right. But because of the way they're trying to share it, they're trying to make it entertaining, and so sometimes it gets a little too much fantastic. So anyway, what I would do to decompress whenever I watched a video that upset me, whenever I'd find out that aliens were going to come kill us or the Nazis owned us or anything that any kind of upsetting thing I could come to, I would flip it over on a YouTube channel that just made musical backbeats. My favorite guy on there, I've got a few people I really like, but my favorite online musical provider, he sells beats. His name is That Kid Goron. I like so much of his stuff. I just wish I had the money to pay him for all the stuff I used. So,
speaking of different subjects, Sam, have you ever heard of Chief Hole in the Day? He's Ojibwe up from Minnesota. And a couple of thoughts in my mind is, what technically does hole in the day mean? What do you think it means to you?
Yeah, hole in the day is also known as hole in the sky. His name is Bokone Gijik, and that Gijik refers to the sky. And so It's mostly like a rotation of the sky would make a full day. Anyway, this he was a well-known leader of the Ojibwe people, and a lot of times that name was given to people. This hole in the sky refers to a connection of like a constellation in the sky where a connection could be made with the Creator, a direct connection. And so the name has spiritual connotations to it that they would give to young men, maybe young women, who displayed this connection at an early age.
So we're going to be talking about Hole in the Day, it sounds like. Hole in the Day, he was a, that's right, he was a chief of the Ojibwe, the Mississippi Band, which is in up in Minnesota, which is also on a White Earth Reservation nowadays. 1847, Hole in the Day succeeded his father, who was also a Hole in the Day. They are saying that Hole in the Day could also mean that one of them was born on the eclipse of the sun. Or there could have been an opening in an overcast sky and the sunlight was streaming down. And there's also other references that means it's a guardian spirit that's seen through an opening in the sky. So, back to Hole in the Day. Hole in the Day was prominent. He had a lot of skirmishes against the Sioux. He's also prominent in his negotiations with Dakota and the U.S. government. The younger version of Hole in the Day strove to be considered the head chief of all the Minnesota Ojibwe, and many white government officials did consider him to be the head chief. This mostly was because he was so ambitious, and he's also involved in most of the important negotiations and all the Ojibwe and U.S. government dealings. He also is said he was very articulate and had a stately manner, though a lot of the Ojibwe from other bands do not recognize him as the head chief. You know, they also, there's a lot of talk about people make a big deal of how many wives he had, somewhere between five and seven. One of them was a white Irish woman, and she was a journalist, so there's a lot of talk about that, but we're not going to get focused on that. We're going to get focused on is 1862, the Dakota Wars. The younger Hole in the Day, he wanted to join forces with the Dakota to drive the European settlers out of Minnesota. He threatened to attack and control Fort Ripley, and he helped many Minnesota Ojibwe to join the battles. And he spread, and there's rumors that he spread rumors that the government was drafting Ojibwe men to become in this ongoing civil war. So due to all this, the Leech Lake Ojibwe was supposedly burned the Indian Agency up there, and they took prisoners and marched down to Crow Wing. And Crow Wing is going to be very important. We'll talk about that here in a minute because Crow Wing has to do with his assassination. So, excuse me, I'm also very congested. So, not as congested as was yesterday, or I'd really be able to understand a word I was saying. So, this is a, I'm going to read a little bit from Mark Diedrich. It's called Chief Hole in the Day in the 1862 Chippewa Disturbance. All right. On August 18th, 1862, a day which the Sioux troubles began at Redwood Agency in southwestern Minnesota, events were already in motion towards a Chippewa uprising at the Gull and Leech Lake Reserves, the northern part of the state. There was spread word at Gull Lake that the famed Chief Hole in the Day was going to clean out the country and drive on to St. Paul. They passed word to the Chippewa agent Lewis C. Walker at the Chippewa Agency, which was near Crow Wing. Which is Crow Wing, is there's a river called Crow Wing, so that's where this Crow Wing is coming from. Crow Wing is basically, from my understanding, is where the Indian Agency really is at. So the Indian agent Lewis C. Walker was at Fort Ripley, and he was got to, he had two dozen soldiers arrive at Crow Wing, and they were going to go to Hole in the Day and rest them, right? So they headed to his home. The soldiers underneath Lieutenant J.B. Forbes discovered Hole in the Day and a companion, outside the village. The chief quickly darted into the woods and ran back to his house. By the time the soldiers came up, he and his wives and children had almost crossed to the west side of the Mississippi River in canoes. Shots were fired, apparently by both the chief and the soldiers, and it's thought that one bullet hit Holliday, but he made good his escape. He therefore began to incite an uprising and earnestly messaged of war to all the Chippewa bands as far as north as Lake Superior. So we got a lot of the Anishinaabe in that area. In the meantime, Agent Walker fled to St. Cloud with his wife, and he put her on stage for St. Anthony on August 20th and said he was going out of business. Indian Commissioner William Doe, who was in St. Cloud, found the agent so distracted that he could not get an adequate report of the situation at Crow Wing. Walker, despite a bad case of hemorrhoids, ouch, right? He took a horse and rode south along the Mississippi to the ferry near Monticello. He cut the lashings and ferried himself across the river. When an irate ferryman demanded they return the boat, Walker refused, saying there was 300 Indians after him, and he disappeared. And no one knew where Walker was. They went looking for him. His wife sent men looking for him, and they found him 3 miles below a place called Big Lake with a bullet hole in his head and one barrel of his revolver empty. They're saying that basically he went insane and killed himself. When the Indians learned of Walker's death, they felt that one cause of their trouble was removed. So what brought such an explosive situation with the Minnesota Chippewa that had never fought against the United States before? Prominent Minnesota historians like William Fulwell and Newton Winchell believe the reasons given by then the Superintendent of Indian Affairs of the Northern Superintendency, Clark Thompson's, had to do with the late Agent Walker, Holliday, an old firm of Indian traders who liked to traffic whiskey. And there's also a whole lot of fighting over money and annuities and who should get the annuities, who should pass out the annuities. It gets a little crazy. So now let's go to the assassination. So, I mean, there's a lot of Holliday, a lot of books written about it. He was a fascinating character, I'll tell you that. Oh. Oh, just 1 second. I'm going through many tabs here because there's just so much information on the guy. Okay. So about 135 years ago now, two Indians were driving a buggy drawn by two ponies on the southern tip of Cass County on a rugged trail between Gull and Crow Wing Rivers. They didn't know, and a few people since seemed to know, is that 11 other Indians were hidden behind the trail, planted in an ill-fated ambush. They rose suddenly with a war whoop, and two of them leveled rifles at the Indians and the buggies. The ponies bolted and fried, the buggy overturned, and the marked man shouted in Chippewa tongue, "You've caught me in a bad moment, I am unarmed." Two shots rang out, then the marauding party ran forward and clubbed the stricken man to death. The other Indian man was grabbed and roughly handled while he watched the man for whom he was bodyguard to die. And this was the death of Joseph Holliday. He was probably about 41 when this happened, this assassination. So they rifled his pockets, and what they found was a couple, a gold watch basically, and some money. They went to his house where his five wives were, and they were going to talk about how they were going to molest the women. But the other Ojibwe that got captured told them that was bad and bring the military authorities down because it would be a white woman. And so the attacking party of Indians left. Holliday's body was brought from the scene of murder back to his house, then taken to the old village of a Crow Wing for burial in an unmarked grave. They put in a Catholic cemetery because they believed he was a convert. And basically, no one in the murder party was ever punished. And for one thing, it was an Indian-on-Indian murder on Indian land at the time. So there's like no jurisdiction at all. And the site where it happened is deserted, and it's basically a state park. It's off a short distance from Highway 371 south of Brainerd. And actually, that's where I'm finding the site. It's a place called Brainerd's Dispatch, which makes sense. Up the hill are two old cemeteries hidden by underbrush. Their crosses fallen, their headstone shattered. And they say Holliday was buried just outside there. But now let's talk about legends. Apparently, I gotta scroll down here. Now, when they went to, there were some grave robbers, and they went to, when they're robbing the graves, they went up there, and when they dug up that one right there, the one that he supposedly was buried in, it was empty. Apparently, there's rumor that his family and some part of the tribe actually dug him up after he's killed. And they went and took him and did a traditional ceremonial burial outside of there, which is now White Earth, the White Earth Reservation. You know, and Holliday was born in 1827. It was 1847 when he became chief of his band. And a lot of the chiefs refused to recognize him because of his young age, because he was barely 20. And he made a speech, basically, in the speech. I got to find the speech, right? It's got to be crazy. He dared all the elders to remove him. And so not everybody was scared to remove him. So he just became, from that point on, he became the person of influence, especially among the whites. And that was the government. So there's a lot of talk about how he's a romanticist and other stuff. But definitely check out Hole in the Day. And, you know, my fascination with it is my name is Hole in the Sky, which is Wonkwe Gishek. So this is Hole in the Day. So I would just always like to find people that had similar native names and just see what they did in life. So, Sam, we'll go ahead and I think next we're going to talk about some apps we've been playing with, right? I know you've been really curious about this one.
How long have you been using the Synchronicity app, Josh? Have you tried any of the other ones before, or was this sort of one of the ones you got started with?
You're right, Sam. So let's talk about the app. It's called Synctuition. And I've had Synctuition for 33 days now, 35 days. And I can tell that my overall drive has increased. Starting to see small aspects of myself have improved. You know, still have long ways to go on a lot of stuff. But it's a really cool app. It's kind of expensive. I won't lie. I used Christmas money I got to get it about a year subscription. And basically, you can do it at night. Sometimes I do it during the day. And I always fall asleep like 7 minutes into it with my headphones on. I mean, and I'm a person that has trouble sleeping, like you won't believe. And I mean, I crash on it. I crash on it every single time I wake up. You know, and I feel so refreshed, like I am feeling the best refreshed that I have in a long time. And I can also tell when I've gone 2 or 3 days without doing it, like I feel a little bit more negative. So basically each little thing is 25 minutes. And their website says, which I would agree with this, that 25 minutes of it has the same effect as 4 hours of deep meditation. And that's equivalent to, you know, if you get some deep meditation going, you're really rested. It uses your voice. You record your voice, so you have a personalized frequency off your voice. It has rhythmic entrainment, binaural beats with gamma waves, and it has 3D sounds. That's why you gotta use the headphones, because of 3D sounds. So, I mean, I'm on level 2. There's supposed to be like 6 levels. And each level has about 12 to 20 stages. And each stage unlocks after the next one. You got to wait like 12 to 20 hours. You know, and they've had ones like passion, anger. What animal are you? I mean, there is just so many different. It's something. It has a 7-day free trial. So I sent it to Sam. We gave him the same 7-day free trial, and you can't really go to the next one because it does it in order because it's slowly unlocking you to get the frequency waves in. And if I do it during the day, I mean, I'm really rested afterwards. I feel like I have been asleep, like I took a good nap. So I like to do it at night. Though, I mean, I really don't remember what I've listened to, but I've had, it's basically about your intuition is what they keep saying. And I've had different patterns shown to me. Sometimes I can stay awake during the whole thing and, I feel like I'm seeing different visions and stuff. I feel like a whole lot of unlocked baggage has also been revealed to me, stuff that I kind of put away, stuff that I brought now to my present, and I just kind of dealt with it and tossed it. Like, I feel like so much better. So definitely Syncuition. It's called Syncuition Mind Spa Meditations. Definitely, it's on Google. It's on the App Store. Definitely check it out. Like I said, Sam's tried it. He definitely loved it too, so... If you want to try a 7-day free trial or something, definitely put that on your phone. Definitely. Syncuition. 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 Too bad they didn't come pay me for doing that little deal, right? It's an awesome app.
Yeah, Josh, I have enjoyed the Synchronicity app. It's a good app. Thank you for sending me that trial. One of the things that I'm most impressed with the app is with the sound that they've got included in the app is it's really impressive, whoever put it together. One of the things I noticed on a few of the meditations, well, all the ones I listened to, was how the sound flows from one ear to the other. Of course, you use headphones to listen to this app, and the way that they have it tuned, often one of the things is water. You'll hear water in your left ear and it'll flow over to your right ear. And one of the things, what they're doing there is it's training your brain to work together on the left brain and the right brain. Whenever you can get both sides of your brain to work together, you are going to have a little more pep in your step. You're going to wake up a little happier because whenever we only tune into one side of our brain, we also tune out the other side. And so it's going to make you feel a little bit better. I've been really impressed with meditation, and it's sometimes hard to get started with. It may take a little while before you can adjust and before you can really calm yourself to it. But when you get in that rhythm, I can see where people enjoy doing it every day. It's definitely something we need to do a little bit more. I've also been excited, well, not really excited, but happy for, the future of sanity. They've been, air quotes, punishing kids at some schools by having them meditate instead of just go into timeout. And I think that's a good idea because a lot of times maybe they were just leaving it up to the kid to figure out that he could meditate while he's in timeout, and that there are benefits to that, not just for the kid, but for everyone around the kid.
So this is a battle between Frost and Whirlwind. Jeremiah Curtin tells this story. So Dagwondonit, which is Whirlwind, an old woman, those former people lived in the forest were for two grandchildren, a boy and a girl. One day when the grandmother was out digging roots, a Junosquaw, which is Frost and Red Cold, came to the cabin, picked up the little girl, and after speaking kindly, telling her she was a nice little thing, and swallowed her. Then he began talking to the boy. Sit down by him, said, "Get him onto my back. I'll carry to you where your grandmother is. Get onto my back. I'll carry you to where your grandmother's digging roots." The boy did as Junosquaw told him, but was frightened, and he clung to her so tightly that he became fastened to her back and couldn't get off, though he tried hard. Junosquaw started off in a different direction from where the boy's grandmother was. And the boy told her she was going the wrong way. He said, "No, I'm not. We'll soon come to where she's at work." The woman went far into the forest, and the boy began to cry for his grandmother. He cried so hard and loud that she no squaw told him to get off her back. She didn't like to hear him cry, and she thought it was best to eat him at once. He couldn't get off, and she couldn't put her hands around to pull him off, nor turn her head to bite him. When the boy saw that she couldn't harm him if he stayed where he was, he clung all the tighter and stopped trying to get away. When the grandmother came home and found that the boy and the girl were in the cabin, she was frightened and began searching for him. After a while, she came upon the tracks of the Jinnisqaw woman, and she knew that she who had stolen the children followed the tracks, thinking she'd overtake the chief, or overtake the thief. The woman was tired of the little boy and tried everything to free herself. She rubbed him against hickory trees, against rocks. He said, "Oh, I like that, rub harder." So she stopped and traveled on. The grandmother followed in the form of a whirlwind. Jinnisqaw said to the boy, "Your grandmother's coming. She'll kill us both. Get off my back." Boy kept still and didn't answer. The woman looked around for a hiding place and found one deep ravine. She dug a hole within, went to herself, covered herself with the earth, and slipped down from above. When she heard a whirlwind coming nearer and nearer, she said, "Can you hear your grandmother coming?" He didn't answer. The whirlwind rushed toward the place where the woman lay. The boy shouted to her. She heard him and, changing her course, came straight to where they were. When she asked the boy if he was there, the woman told him to keep still, but he called out, "I am here." The whirlwind blew the earth from the hiding place and shouted, "Dewaganiyat, get off Jinnisqaw's back." That instant, the boy slipped off and went among the rocks. The old woman hurled stones at Jinnisqaw, tore off her clothes, and killed her. Then she took her grandson and started off for home. By the way, she said to him, "Never let yourself be treated that manner again. Never let anyone abuse you. You can conquer everybody if you use your power, for you are of the whirlwind family." The old woman stayed at home for a time caring for her grandson. Meanwhile, some Jinnisqaw's women's people found her trail and followed it until they came to where her body was. They asked who killed her, and her spirit answered, "Whirlwind killed me." Right away, the Jinnisqaw women decided to kill old woman Whirlwind. Whirlwind, out of her journey, discovered their plans. She went home and said to her grandson, "We must get your sister out of Jinnisqaw's stomach. She's sitting there crying for me." They set out. When they reached the place where the body lay, the old grandmother built a fire and began to burn tobacco, saying, "This is what we like. This is what we like." She burned half a pouch full and pushed smoke towards the body. "This is what we like. My grandchild, come out of Jinnisqaw's body." When the girl didn't come, the old woman said to her grandson, "We must have people come help us. We have many relatives, uncles, aunts, and cousins. We'll call them." And they called each one after name, and they all came. They built a bigger fire around the head and burned tobacco. As they walked around the fire, each one threw in tobacco, saying, "Nevonos, Nevonos, this is what we like." The last one throws tobacco. The girl, panting for breath, came and asked, "How long have I been there?" She was very weak. They gave her tobacco smoke, and she held it till she gained strength, and all the whirlwinds went home. When the old woman and her grandchild had been at home some time, a Jinnisqaw woman came to the cabin. She talked pleasantly, found out there were only three persons there and left. They could be a small task to kill them. After the woman gone, Whirlwind said to her grandchildren, "We are in trouble now. A great number of those people come against us. They have assembled somewhere nearby. When the struggle begins, I don't know what will be. Oh no, that we'll be able to come home again." She went and called, "Dagoni, Dagawa, Dagunigawa." The girl asked, "Grandmother, what are you doing?" She said, "I'm calling our relatives," answered the old woman. The whirlwinds came one by one. The old woman said, Each one of you must have a big round stone to strike with." They just picked up the stones when the Jinnisqaws began to come. There were thousands and thousands of them. The whirlwinds were frightened when they saw how strong the enemy was. The old woman said, "We must separate and fight singly. Keep the stones in your hand. Be firm and have faith that you'll kill one man with each blow you strike." The whirlwinds went in different directions. The Jinnisqaws chased them. The whirlwinds struck whenever they had the chance and kept retreating. They went up high mountains fighting as they went. The old woman said, "When we reach the top, we'll go down a short distance on the other side. When the Jinnisqaws come up to the top, we'll strike them on the east and on the west. Some will get behind them. We'll drive them over the mountains to the deep ravine on the other side. They'll die there, for a river runs through the ravine, and they cannot cross it." The Jinnisqaws came to the top of the mountain, saying nothing of the whirlwinds. They thought they escaped. They stood and listened. Soon they heard wind on each side of them. The sound grew louder and louder. The Dagwanyat struck them on both sides, uniting the rear, struck them from behind. So fierce was the attack and power of the whirlwinds that they tore out all the trees by the roots, swept the earth from the top of the mountain, hurled trees and earth in the ravine and river below. The Jinnisqaws were piled up like rocks in the river along the banks. The whirlwinds were dancing and rejoicing on top of the mountain when the woman said, "We'll have hurled our enemies in the ravine. Now we'll fierce them. Happy along the ridges of the east river and the other happy on the western ridges. Blow all the trees and rocks and earth into the ravine." They went, and when they came together, they had stripped the mountain spur's neck and filled up the ravine. The river had no outlet. It became a great lake, and after it was called the Grave of Jinnisqaws. Mama P, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we will see you next week with some, actually maybe probably this week, with some new guest speakers. And if you want to join the show or anything, just feel free to give Samurai a shout. If you want to talk about anything in the world, we'd like to thank the hundreds of listeners once again. for keeping the show alive. So thanks for joining us in on season two. And we're just going to keep on rolling. I bet there'd be a good time to say rolling. Yeah, Sam's ending was a lot better than mine, so you're stuck with me. Till then, see you next time.
So, Sam, can you describe the process of the wood box? Your wood box making skills? Actually, let's back that up. When did you start making your cedar boxes? I know I got one from you a couple years ago, so you've been doing this for a while. When did your journey first begin with this wonderful art? Sam, what's the... Now that we know about why you got on this journey, in a sense, can you tell us the process? Like, do you smudge or anything like that before you start the box? Or you just go out there and get the old hacksaw and cut down a tree? How do you actually do this, do your fine art? And last, Sam, how does someone go about purchasing one of these boxes? I've seen that you have some raffles going on and such. Is there any other way? Can I just, like, send you a message and say, Sam, I want a box? I mean, that's what I did, but it's been years. But I do really enjoy its fine craftsmanship, I tell you that.
Yeah, what is it, noon?
12:30.
This is pretty busy.
So, yeah, so I'm sitting here outside the Dairy Lou, free advertising for them, with Sam.
Bonjour, everybody.
We've been working all day. That they got this cool pager system. We're waiting for our double cheeseburgers.
Yeah, I've never had this. This is at the Dairy Lou. The Dairy Lou in Ada. I like Coca-Colas, in case you want to give me free drinks for life for saying that. But it's been a big day. We're getting a lot of things done. I met a new dog today. Or I think I did. I actually met that dog before.
Right. Then you met the neighbor's dogs, too.
Yeah.
A lot of weenie dogs.
A lot of weenie dogs, yeah. It was. He's living in the weenie dog district.
That is correct.
Of Ada. It's a good place to be. But it's a beautiful day in Oklahoma today, April 30th. Month's about over. I'm going to have to get me a new phone card tomorrow.
Oh, really?
So I figure we better go on and do some recording today.
Oh, we better then, yeah. Won't be able to download any of that explicit lyrics or anything like that anymore. No. Play on YouTube at slow speed.
Watching too much Disney Network.
Yep. It's all going to go downhill from here.
That's what gets me, is that Disney.
Yeah, Disney. I still want to watch the Falcon and Winter Soldier. I haven't done it yet.
Oh, have you not? No, I figured you'd be all over that one.
I know, right?
I've about watched it all.
Have you?
Not of that. I haven't really done the Marvel comic.
I'm waiting for the Loki show to come on.
Yeah.
Loki's going to be funny.
See, I could catch up on all that. I like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And I watched a couple of the other Marvel ones. The one with Kronos, what's his name? Guy with the fist diamonds.
Thanos.
Yeah.
My kids would be knocking you across your head right now if you said Kronos.
Rolling him Kronos. That's who it is, isn't it?
Thanos.
Yeah, or wait, no, he was a different Greek god.
Yeah, Kronos is a different Greek god.
But weren't they both in charge of time?
Kronos is in charge of time. Thanos just has a time stone.
Oh, okay.
Right, there you go. Y'all guys are learning a little Marvel history.
Mm-hmm. And Greek history.
Yeah. And we've been talking about CPN history. All y'all people who've been trolling each other. We've been figuring out who you are.
Right. Oh, everybody needs to just... What they need to compete about is who can treat the other with more respect and who can give more. That's what it needs to be about. Like, who can give more respect?
Right, but, you know, we're all attacking each other because we're Facebook warriors.
Right. We are pretty...
That's my Facebook clan. It's my dotem, you know?
That's your dotem, yeah. That's pretty good. Facebook dotem.
I'd be like, I'm part of the keyboard clan. Who are you?
Well, we are pretty good arguers, you know. I feel like over the last few years, we've developed into this ability to really argue. However, whenever we'll run to a corner, because that's the corner we like the best, we don't come out and experience the whole area. It's good to be a good debater, but you have to have good topics or good issues. Otherwise, we could just be talking about basketball.
Right. Then I'm going to get pissed. I'm going to take my invisible ball home too. You know.
Right. Take that on home. And.
But I do like about Facebook is after I piss you off, I can turn off the notifications that you're still talking. Did you?
Oh, that's true. You can.
I do that quite a bit, actually. Like, I get somebody all riled up, then I go over there and say, turn off all notifications for this post, and I just carry on.
Yeah.
Then I take a screenshot of it and usually send it to you, Sam.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a couple of those. I'm more like, if I get in one of those, I usually will just start complaining. My rants will go from about, I don't know, maybe 10 line long to about 20, and then if you're unlucky, like 30. And then they'll start to taper off, and then usually somebody will come in there with jokes or memes, and then I get distracted by the good times.
What's this? No vibration or beep, okay. Yeah, they got these fancy pagers here. We're number 16, so we're waiting for it to page and beep us when our food's ready. So
yeah.
But it's just flashing a red light. I've just been doing it the whole time. You know, I also run away from my topic whenever I see my Uncle Perry jump in, because I'm like, oh, God, this thing's going to go south really quick.
I do that sometimes with
the... I know Perry's probably listening, so I get to say that.
Sometimes I'll see my last name pop up with somebody else's first name, and I'll be like, uh-oh, here we go.
Here we go,
you know, here it goes. And
there's another Navarre in this conversation.
Yeah,
why Bear
know
just
where
run?
It's going to go from there.
Well, see, that there's this lady. It was a... I want to say it was a... Oh, there's our food.
Alright, well, I'm going to wrap this recording up. That way you guys don't have to listen to me smacking. Like I said, we're here at the Dairy Lou in Ada. And we got a couple of double cheeseburgers coming and some tots. And I think Josh got him a Dr. Pepper. I'm just drinking on a Gatorade. It's just a fun moving day. But it's beautiful weather in Oklahoma, and we just wanted to check in with you guys. I hope you guys are having a beautiful day wherever you are. Please feel free to email us with any of your questions or comments or anything you'd like to hear us discuss. And if it's something that we have a little bit of knowledge in or can maybe help you spread your message, then let us know and we'd be happy to help. Miigwech for tuning in to us. Have a great day.